How does God see time? How does God experience time? Or does God even experience time? Some provocative questions that we're going to get into in this episode of the Faith by Reason podcast. The website behind it all is faithbyreason.net. There you'll find the blog, the archives, categories, this podcast, as well as links to our social media. So please follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook and send your comments. We'd love to hear them. So in this podcast, the fourth, we are continuing the theme of what's the point. That's the first series of the blogs that are on faithbyreason.net. And we're asking the question, what's the point? What's the point of existence? What's the meaning of life? Why are we here? Those are the existential questions that we all have, whether a Christian, atheist, Muslim, Hindu. We all want to know why we're here. And so far, what we've come to see is that, first of all, we look at existence and the fact that existence exists, you know, brilliant. And then we looked at the cardinal rules of existence, which are non-contradiction, meaning something can't be and not be, as well as causality, which states that for every effect you see, there is a cause, and that cause is greater than and independent of the effect. And we also know through science that our existence, our universe, is finite. There is not an infinite regression of causality. At some point, the universe existence didn't exist, then it did, which means something caused it. And whatever caused existence, whatever caused the universe, had no precedent cause, meaning it was a first cause, a cause with no preceding cause. And now whatever that first cause is, it's very important for us to understand it, because that the first cause of existence will probably have a really good answer to our question of what's the point of existence. So what can we know about this first cause? Well, in the last broadcast, we looked at the fact that the first cause had to be supernatural. Why? Because we know from science, particularly the laws of thermodynamics, that the universe could not have come into existence naturally. It could not have come into existence of its own volition. So the universe coming into existence, matter existing, can be done naturally. Therefore, it has to be supernatural. So the first cause is supernatural. The next thing we looked at about the first cause was that it was transcendent. It was not only outside of physical matter and energy, it's also outside of time and space. And that's really where I want to do a deeper dive right now, because as I stated in the last broadcast, on the post that deals with this, the transcendency of the first cause, there was a fairly animated discussion about how the first cause sees time. And, well, okay, spoiler alert, I believe the first cause is God. And I'm going to prove that in the next podcast. So yeah, stay tuned for that. The next podcast, we will prove the existence of God. But in the meantime, I'm just going to presume that the first cause is God. And the discussion was about how God sees time. And in the way he sees time, does that affect free will and self-determination? And the back and forth is really about whether God really sees things happen before they happen. And if he does, does that somehow violate free will? And of course, if that violates free will, then that's a really big problem for all of Christian philosophy, because Christian philosophy is based on the idea that man chooses God, or that God wants man to choose him. And without free will, we can't make that choice to choose God, to love God. So if God sees time before it happens, if he knows what we're going to do before we do it, do we really have free will? And the folks who were getting into the discussion with me were kind of on the side of saying that God can't know what we're going to do before we do it, because, you know, that free will thing has to exist in order for us to love him. I, on the other hand, do believe that God is outside of time, that he doesn't see time the way we do, definitely. But he does know what we're going to do before we do it. But I don't see a disconnect between God knowing what we're going to do before we do it and us having the free will to do it. And I gave a couple of examples of how that works. One of the examples I gave in the last podcast was the past. The past is a segment of time that we can look at that shows that we can know something that's happened and it not affect free will. For example, yesterday happened. We all did things yesterday, And when we did those things yesterday, we had free will doing them. Now today, I can look back on yesterday, and you can look back on yesterday and look at every single thing you did, and you can see it. You can see everything you did in your mind's eye, but you still had free will when you did all those things. Therefore, that proves that there is an aspect of time that you can look at and see, and it not affect, and it's set in stone, but it doesn't affect free will. But I want to do a deeper dive in this session, because I think this is deserving of a little more examination, because it's tough to wrap our minds around. It's really high concept, the idea of God, the first cause, being outside of time. We can't conceive of that. The best way we can do it is through some analogies and metaphors. But before I get into that, before I give my thoughts about how God sees time, I want to look at the argument against. Now, we human beings, we see time as the past, the present, and the future. The past goes back from the moment of present all the way to the beginning of our conception, our ability to know anything. That's all the past. The present is this split nanosecond right now. As soon as you think about the present, it's already the past. It's the briefest time of all. The past we can see very clearly. The present we can see in that moment. The future is extremely nebulous. We don't know what's going to happen next. We have no future vantage point. Anything we think that's going to happen in the future is pretty much a guess, because we can't see it. But how does God see time? Well, the folks who were in the discussion with me, they believe that God can predict the future. And by the way, it's very clear throughout the Bible that God predicts the future. It's called prophecy. It's a huge, huge part of the Bible. And God gives very detailed prophecy throughout the Bible of things that have that are going to happen before they've happened. And he's done that with 100% accuracy. God has never been wrong, which he couldn't be. If he was, he wouldn't be God. So God predicts the future. The theory that the folks who are talking with me or discussing it with me on the blog, they believe that God can predict the future because, as the first cause, he knows all the causes. And since he knows all the causes, he has all the information of all the causes, he can accurately predict all the effects. And I understand that, but I can even understand how that could work with predicting maybe very general things in the future. I mean, if you know all the causes of man's evil, then you can predict that there's going to be destruction in the future, because if the cause is evil, the effect is destruction. We'll get into that in several episodes down the line when we talk about good and evil. And that works generally, but I don't think it works for specific prophecies. And there are some very, very specific prophecies in the Bible that I don't think can be accounted for simply by knowing the causes. Because I see it one or two ways. If you see the future, you either see it because you either know it because you saw it happen, or you made it happen. Those are the only two options I see that are reasonable. You either see it happen or you make it happen. I just don't see causality as being an adequate explanation for really complex prophecy. And I'll give you an example. The triumphal entry, which we also call Palm Sunday. This is the day that Jesus presented himself as king. It was the week right before he was crucified. But a very specific thing happened. He came in, he rode in on a donkey. He proclaimed himself, he received as king for the first time. People wanted to take him as king previously in the Gospels, but he refused it until now. And he was taken as, he presented himself as the king of the Jews. Of course, the Jewish leadership didn't accept him and crucified him. We'll get into that way down the road. But the point is that this specific prophecy was predicted, not generally, but down to the day. In the book of Daniel, chapter 9, we have the famous 70 weeks prophecy, and where in Daniel's given a vision of all of Jewish history. He's given a vision of it, and it's a very precise. It's called the 70 weeks because the angel who's giving the prophecy specifically says that there will be 70 weeks of years, 70 shibuyim, or 490 years from the time that the temple is reestablished in Israel after the Babylonian captivity until the very end of the Jewish age. And for 69 of those weeks, at the end of the first 69 weeks, the Messiah, Mashiach Nagib, or the Messiah, the Prince, Messiah, the King, will present himself. And that is an exact prophecy. It's basically saying that 69 weeks of years, or 483 years, are going to pass from the time the temple is reestablished until the very day that Jesus presents himself as the Messiah. And that prophecy was fulfilled to the day. God gave himself a 24-hour margin of error with making a prediction that was almost 500 years in the making. Now, how could he, what causes would could lead him to make that that distinction, to make that that prophecy happen? I don't think there are any causes. There are too many things that could have happened in between the time Daniel was given that prophecy until the time Jesus presented himself. And I there are so many things that had to happen. The Roman Empire had to come to be. The Greek Empire had to happen. All these various things had to happen over these hundreds of years in order for everything to be in place, for Jesus to ride in specifically on that donkey on that day. And I just don't see how causes could lead to that. I think God either saw it happen or he made it happen. I don't believe he made it happen. I believe he saw it happen. I will give you another example, that of Cyrus the Persian. And this goes back to the time of Daniel. Again, Daniel was a man of God who lived in Babylon during the Babylonian captivity of Israel. And God had basically put a curse on Israel because they had been doing wrong, which they often did. And the curse said that they would be taken captive and held in Babylon for 70 years as punishment for doing wrong. But at the end of that 70 years, they would be released and they would go back to Israel and rebuild the temple. So, and the prophet Isaiah wrote about how this was going to happen. And he named a man named Cyrus. He said that in Isaiah 44 and 45, God specifically tells Isaiah that Cyrus the Persian is going to be the one who will release Israel to go back to the land. Now, this was some 200 years before Cyrus was born, which means it was decades before his parents were born, decades still before his grandparents were born, maybe even his great-grandparents. Yet God calls this man by name. God specifically says in Isaiah, "Hey, Cyrus, I'm calling you by name hundreds of years, a couple hundred years before you're even born, to tell you that you're going to release my people." Now, when the time had come, when the 70 years were up, Daniel, who lived a couple hundred years after Isaiah, he brings a copy of the dusty old scroll of Isaiah to Cyrus, who had taken over the Babylonian Empire by this time, as the Persians had become the dominant empire. And he showed this old scroll to Cyrus the Persian, who was the leader at that time. This scroll that talks about him years, decades before he was even born, telling him what he's going to do and that God names him by name. And Cyrus was understandably impressed by what he saw, and he fulfilled the prophecy, and he got Israel go. Question again, what causes could lead to God knowing that this man would A, be born, B, be the king of Persia, or the ruler of Persia, and C, be named Cyrus? Again, before his parents were born, before his grandparents were born, before his great-grandparents were born, that there's not enough causality in the world to make that happen, factoring in man's free will. What if on the night Cyrus was going to be conceived, his parents had a fight? Or his grandparents had never met? What if one of them got killed in battle? There's too many butterfly effect things that could have happened to make me think that you could know all this just based solely on causality. I think it's just not a good explanation for it. So I've given you what I think isn't the way God sees time. So I think it's only fair that I tell you or give you an idea of how I think God does see time. And God kind of gives us a really good hint at that, and it's not something I'm just going to pull out of my hat. I think that we are given a book in the Bible that actually gives us a very interesting glimpse into how God sees time. Someone who occupies eternity sees time, and that's the book of Revelation. But before I get there, let's just discuss a couple of things about how time works. Remember, time, as we experience it, the time that we are in, past, present, future, it's actually a physical dimension. It's the fourth dimension. We have our three spatial dimensions, height, width, and depth, that we experience. Then there's time as another dimension. This is Einsteinian law, that time is a fourth dimension. And according to Einstein, time affects and is affected by things that have mass. E equals mc squared. Speed of light equals mass time acceleration, gravity, blah, blah, blah. You can look it up for yourself. But if you have mass, then you are affected, and you're affected by and affect time. However, if you don't have mass, then the converse is true. You don't experience time. God does not have mass, therefore, God is not affected by time. Does that mean he doesn't see things in a sequence? I don't think that's necessarily accurate, but what it really means is he doesn't see time the way we do. He sees it differently. How? Well, I'm going to contend that God sees time as stories. Now, is that an exact representation? Not necessarily, but I think for our purposes, I think looking at stories is a great way to understand how God sees time. Because if you are in eternity, if you don't see past, present, and future, then everything's really happening at once. And the closest approximation we have to that, since we are stuck in linear time, is stories. Remember, stories, the great stories are considered timeless. And I don't think, and even though that's kind of a bit of vernacular, I think it actually has real meaning to it. Stories are timeless for a really good reason. They affect us on a deep level. I mean, think of all the great stories that you may have read, or even movies you've seen. Think of Wuthering Heights. Think of The Lord of the Rings, or War and Peace, Tale of Two Cities. Any of these great stories are for one of my favorites growing up is Star Wars, and not the original Star Wars from the 70s and 80s, not the horrible abomination of the prequels, or even the one that just came out at the end of 2015, which was just a blatant lazy ripoff of the original Star Wars. I mean, the original, that's a timeless story, and no matter how many times I see it, it still affects me the same way. Think about it. I mean, one of the big arguments against God seeing time before it happens is because God has emotional reactions. You see them all through the Bible. God gets angry. God is sad. He gets grieved. God experiences joy. But if you've seen everything that's happened, then how could you be angry at anyone? How can you be surprised? How can you be grieved? How can you be saddened? You should say, oh, yeah, I saw this happen. No big deal. But I think stories are a way to understand this. Again, think of the great stories. Think I'm going back to Star Wars again. No matter how many times I see it, I still feel those same things. And I've seen it hundreds of times, literally. But it doesn't affect my experience. In the first Star Wars, I know that Luke Skywalker is going to blow up the Death Star and he's going to be successful. But I still feel nervous when he's on that final flight, when Darth Vader's behind him and he's about to shoot him. I still feel nervous, even though I know what he's going to do. When I watch The Empire Strikes Back, which is, by the way, the best Star Wars film, I still get excited seeing the flight of the Millennium Falcon through the asteroid field. I know they're going to make it through. I know they're going to make it to Cloud City, but it still thrills me. Why? Because stories are timeless. So why do I think that God experiences things as stories? Well, let's go to the Book of Revelation really quick. The Book of Revelation is very unique in that it gives us a perspective that no other book does. And let me just start by just reading the first couple of verses. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants things which must shortly take place. And he sent and signified it by his angel to his servant John, who bore witness to the word of God and to the testimony of Jesus Christ to all the things that he saw. So that first line is very important. The book of Revelation is not the revelation of John. That's what it's called in certain versions. But it's the revelation of Jesus Christ. So this whole book, the entire book of Revelation, is God revealing something to Jesus. He's revealing Jesus to Jesus. And what does that mean? Well, let's keep in mind that when Jesus came to earth, he was incarnate, he gave up a lot. We have no way to conceive of everything he gave up. He became a normal person. When he was born, as a baby, he wasn't born like knowing quantum physics. He didn't pop out of the womb and say, hello, Mary, I'm the Lord your God. Now change my diaper and give me some milk. No, he was a regular baby. He cried and peed and pooped just like any other baby. The Bible is very clear where it says in the Gospels that Jesus grew in knowledge, wisdom, and in grace with God and men. So when he was a baby, he acted like a baby. And as he grew up, God began to slowly reveal things to him. He was born with a connection to God, which the only other man who was born that way was Adam. And we'll get into that when we talk about original sin and Adam. But none of us are born with that connection to God. Jesus was born with it, and God was able to speak to him, but he revealed things slowly to him as a man. So as a child, he explained things to him that a child would understand, and as he grew up, he ramped it up. And during Jesus' life, and he lived somewhere between 30 and 40 years, depending on Where you believe he was born, there's controversy about that, but it's not important. So he was on Earth less than 40 years, and that, but he was starting from scratch, ground zero. He didn't know it. He knew nothing, and God was just gradually revealing things to him. And I don't think those 30, 40 years was enough for God to tell him everything, since God has all the information. And of course, Jesus did when he was at the beginning. You know, Jesus is part of the Trinity, and we'll get into the Trinity later. But he was there with God, and he created the universe. And he knew everything God knew, God the Father knew, but he only, God had only 30, 40 years to explain it to him, and that wasn't enough time to explain everything, obviously. So when Jesus died and rose again, God had to kind of give him a download, to put it in computer terms. He had to say, okay, here's all the information that we didn't have time to get into when you were a man. I have to give you back all the things you knew before. The entire history of the world, the entire plan from the beginning all the way through to the end, because God knows the beginning from the end, which is another reason why I know he sees time differently. The Bible says he sees the beginning from the end in the book of Isaiah, and he had to give Jesus that information. Point is, the book of Revelation is God giving all the information, giving that download to Jesus. So we, in the book of Revelation, when we read it, we have an opportunity to eavesdrop on a conversation between two of the three heads of the Trinity. And that's why the book of Revelation reads very strangely to us a lot of the time, because we don't have right perspective. We don't have the eternal perspective. And so things seem to be happening in an odd, chaotic sense, but we're looking at it as people who experience linear time. And this is a conversation between people, two entities who are in eternity. The best place this is exemplified in Revelation is Revelation chapter 12, which is the vision of the woman, the child, and the dragon. I'm going to read it, and we'll get into it really quickly. So, Revelation 12. Now a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a garland of 12 stars. Then being with child, she cried out in labor and in pain to give birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and 7 crowns or diadems, crowns of royalty, on his head. His tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to earth. The dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth, to devour her child as soon as it was born. She bore a male child who was to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and his throne. Then the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And a war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast down to earth, and his angels down with him. Now, in those 9 verses, you have a whole bunch of things happening at once. You have a woman clothed with the sun. She has all these 12 stars around her. She's in labor. She's giving birth. She gives birth to a child while that child is giving birth. There's this dragon there that has his tail throwing down stars, and he's going to devour the child. And the child is born. It's going to rule the nations. And the woman flees, and the dragon pursues her, and there's a war, and Michael is fighting against the dragon and his angels, and the angels are defeated. All these things are happening at once, but let's look at what these things really are. The woman in heaven is actually a representation of Israel, because we learn in Genesis chapter 39 that the woman clothed with the sun is Israel, because Joseph, who was one of the sons of Jacob, Jacob's 12 sons made up the nation of Israel. He had this vision of a woman who had the sun and the moon and stars around her, and Jacob literally says, hey, you're dreaming about us. You're dreaming about my family. He's dreaming about Israel. So this woman is Israel, in the sense that you're almost starting with Eve. And so just in that one sentence, you're going from Eve to Israel, and that's about 3,000 years of history right there, crying out in pain to give birth. And so now you have the Virgin Mary being brought into this as part of Israel, and the child she's giving birth to is Jesus. So now you have three sentences that cover about 5,000 years of history. And at the same time, there's this dragon who's drawing a third of the stars from heaven to earth, and that represents the fall of Satan and the fall of the angels. Again, one sentence representing eons worth of things happening. And then Jesus, the male child, is going to rule all the nation with a rod of iron. All these things are happening at once. This is a story, and it's timeless, but these few sentences represent thousands of years of history. in this story, in this timeless piece. God basically is giving all of history from prehistory, from the time of the fall of Satan, all the way through the end to the tribulation and the last age on earth in just a matter of a few verses. And how does he do that? In a story. And I believe that's how God sees time. In a way we can conceive of it, he sees it as a story. A story he's already read, just like I've already seen Star Wars. But he's still emotionally invested in the story, just the same way that we're all emotionally invested in the stories that we've read, even though we know what's going to happen. We don't make these things happen. Going back to the Star Wars example, we have the big villain, Darth Vader, just this horrible person. When I first saw him when I was a kid watching Star Wars, I was just frightened of him, and I hated him, and I just, you know, was hoping that somebody would kill him. But then when you watch the prequels, as bad as they were, the point of the prequels were that he wasn't always Darth Vader. He started out in the first movie in the prequel, The Phantom Menace, horrible name, horrible movie, but he was just this sweet little, you know, blonde, tow-headed kid over and on Tatooine, the desert planet, who just wanted to do good. He just wanted to help free him and his mother from slavery, and he just wanted to do the right thing. But I knew that he was going to become Darth Vader. Why? Because I already saw it happen. I saw what Vader was. Did I make it happen? Of course not. I just saw it happen. Therefore, if just to stretch the analogy out even further, if I were able to enter the story of Star Wars as God is able to enter our history, I could have gone back to the very first movie when little Anakin Skywalker was being recruited to be a Jedi, and I could have gone to the Jedi and say, hey, I got a prophecy for you guys. This sweet little kid you see here who just seems like he wants to do nothing but good, he is going to grow up to be this horrible, horrible person who is going to fall to the dark side, and he's going to slaughter all the Jedi. And you guys need to, this is what's going to happen, just be prepared for it. I could do that. Why? Because I've seen the whole story, just the way God has seen the whole story. And it doesn't take away from the fact that the kid had an opportunity to make all the right choices. I didn't affect any of the choices he made. He still had free will. I just knew what he was going to do. And I'm still emotionally affected by it, just as God is. So again, it's a crude example. I'm not even gonna pull any punches with that. It's not exact. It's crude, but I think it gives us a little bit of insight into how God sees time. He sees it differently than we do. He sees eternity. He sees all these things happening at once, and I think a story is a really good approximation of that. So we're about at the 30-minute mark. We have about 3 minutes left. So I'm gonna wrap things up for this little interlude. And in the next podcast, we are going to really get into the identity of the first cause, and I'm going to show and prove how the first cause is God, how he is spirit, and how we are also spirit. And I think that's going to be something that's going to be very interesting. So again, thank you for listening. Please follow us on Twitter and Facebook and send your comments. And I look forward to talking with everyone again soon. Thanks. See you next time.